This episode of The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. With free shipping on orders of $100 or more, a 25% buy list bonus, and their ever-popular customer rewards program, CoolStuffInc is the store for all of your Magic the Gathering needs.
Live fast, die young, bad girls do it well. Live fast, die young, bad girls do it well. Live fast, die young, bad girls do it well.
Hello, boys and ghouls. This is episode number 32 of The Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Hallie with a cold.
I'm Katie with also kind of a cold.
And I'm Chris, and I haven't been sick all year.
Nice.
Which is probably going to change after tonight.
It's in the cyberspace, Chris. It's coming for you.
I'm actively knocking on wood at this moment.
What did you two do? Like, were you out trick-or-treating, or, like, how did this happen?
I don't know. A bunch of my friends have been sick in the last couple weeks, so I guess it was inevitable.
Ugh. I just carved pumpkins. This is damn pumpkin.
Something in the pumpkins, man. Yeah, I've actually started drinking, I quit soda about 10 days ago, so I've actually been feeling quite healthy. Kind of like Chris, I haven't been sick in a long time, so I'm hoping you two don't jinx us.
Yeah, I'm sorry if we do.
Say, I hope not. I've been telling my boss, I haven't called in sick all year. Does this mean like I get some, you know, sweet prize? And I think he told me the other day I'm the only person that hasn't called in the entire year. And I told him at this point I'm just holding it over everyone else so I can feel superior.
That's probably your bargaining chip for how you're going to get the time off for Oakland.
Well, that's already good.
I'm oh, so you excited. Got it?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yay. Yay.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. The Rudigers, Andrew and Courtney, also just confirmed that they will be attending as well.
Oh, fun.
Yay.
So Oakland is shaping up to be a lot of fun.
Cool.
I can't wait.
Brand new review on iTunes from Landstander0516. They gave us 5 stars and said, the ladies of the Girlfriend Bracket never fail as a great, dare I say, premier magic podcast. Whether talking up the latest pro tour, the evolving social dynamics, or even life in general, you will always come away from the cast with something to talk about and probably a smile as well. Please keep up the fine work, ladies. Thank you so much for that lovely review. Woman of excellence this week is a young lady named Erin Adams. Erin Adams is a cosplayer from Ontario, Canada. She's been cosplaying for a little over a year now. She was at GP Quebec City this past weekend, where she played Nahiri the Lithomancer and Amara Tandris. Crushed it. There were pictures of her actually playing. Like, they had, she was seated at one of the 400 tables. The official Magic account tweeted her picture. She looked great. She got a lot of attention from that picture. MJ Scott recently interviewed her at Gathering Magic, and Erin says, I love to create. I like the challenge of bringing something I love to life, as well as all the new skills that I get to learn. She's also a huge fan of the show. I found it on Twitter the other day. She said she's been listening since the beginning. If you want to support Erin, you can find her on Twitter at Erin's Art Stuff. That is ErinsArtStuff. And she's also on Facebook at facebook.com/Erin's Art Stuff.
Nice.
I know, she's pretty great. So GP Quebec City was this past weekend. It was standard. The top 8 included 4 copies of Dark Jeskai, 1 copy of Red Green Eldrazi, Esper Control, played by Reduke. he was wronged, I tell you, at the Pro Tour. Wronged. Abzan and 4 Color Rally. What did you guys think of this top 8? Still Dark Jeskai on top.
So much Dark Jeskai.
So much Dark Jeskai.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I wish I could afford Jace's stuff. It's going to be a recurring theme every week.
So you would be playing this if you could afford it, Katie?
Yes.
Yeah.
The deck that I've been testing with Hallie, which we'll get to in a little bit, is kind of a take on this, but it's a lot more controlling, but it still plays 4 Jace, and that's prohibitive, but I've been borrowing them from Brooke, so it's been working out so far.
So, I think, Hallie, you described this as sort of just being a pile of all the best cards. And I think you said that, you know, with the mana base being the way it is, you can just sort of play everything. So how do you beat a deck that's all the best cards in the format?
That's what I'm trying to figure out right now.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it almost feels like playing Modern when everyone else is playing Standard, because you get this sort of... this game plan where you can either be beating down early with Mantis Riders, or you have all the best removal. You have Kolaghan's Command, you have Ojutai's Command, you can play Crackling Doom, you can play Murderous Cut, you can play Valorous Dance, you can bring an Utter End out of the sideboard. You can just play pretty much whatever you want, and you can also play counterspells. So it's just, it's really hard to argue with at this point, and I'm still trying to figure out how to go about beating it. I would assume that a lot of early pressure would be good, but it doesn't seem to have a hard time holding up against a Tarka Red, so I'm still kind of like trying to figure out what the best way to beat it is.
Mm-hmm. Now, Katie and Chris, when you see a deck like this that's so dominant in a format, are you the type of players that, does this motivate you to want to play Standard to try to beat it, or does it turn you off from a format?
Oh, I actually had this conversation this afternoon where I was telling Aaron from Turn One Thoughtseize, you know, I just don't know that I really want to play Standard right now. Like, I want to have a deck ready so I can go to events, but, like, my heart feels like it's not in it. Mm-hmm. Like I would have more fun, I think, playing Modern right now, especially after game day. Yeah.
When I see a deck like this that's dominating, I want to play the deck.
You want to play it?
Yeah. I mean, sometimes my tactic is like, let's try and figure out how to beat it. But when it seems really well-rounded like this deck does, I just want to play it and become very, very good with it. And then hopefully when I play against other people playing it, I'm playing it better than they are. And then I win. That's always the goal. But this deck really has like brought back my Standard fire. So mm-hmm. I'm hoping to put it together and try it out.
Were either of you around for the Cawblade days, when Cawblade was the oppressive deck of the format?
I've heard many stories of Cawblade.
Okay, people have even gone so far as to say that Dark Jeskai is the new Cawblade. Would you agree with that?
People try to call everything the new Cawblade.
Yeah. I don't know. I have to say, you know, I've been looking at people have certainly been trying to come up with something different. I know Saffron Olive from MTG Goldfish is always posting these crazy brews. He posted one today that I really enjoy called Blue White Marshmallow.
What does that mean?
The theory being that all these white cards like Silk Wrap, Pacifism, Stasis Snare are sort of like marshmallows, and then they pad you or protect you from taking damage. I thought it was kind of cute. It's better than Pillow Fort, you know. Yeah. Something a little bit original, but I really liked it. And he had he had negates in there. And the one thing he did forget, though, was Herald of the Pantheon. Because I was like, if you're going to run all these enchantments and you've got enough mana to play all the colors, you better make room for Pantheon. Because Pantheon gets annoying in a good way when you're playing a lot of enchantments. And he was like, yeah, that's a good point. I probably forgot that. I also noticed if you go into the, you know, they always post the decks that did not make top eight, you can find a couple spicy brews there. There was a deck in 12th place called Sultai Red, which of course has four Jace, but it also has a Den Protector, Deathmist Raptor, four copies of Sidisi. Hey girl, it's been a while. one copy of Sidisi Undead Vizier, one copy of Silumgar, one Atarka. It kind of looks like a Sidisi whip deck, but without the whips. And there's really no other reanimating happening here. There is Kolaghan's Command to maybe get a creature back. But there, it just looks kind of, it looks spicy. Like, I would play this except for the four Jays, of course.
Yeah, I mean, like, sacrificing your Raptors to Sidisi to tutor for things seems good, right?
Yeah. In 13th place was Shahar Shenhar playing Bant Tokens. Now, this was a deck that I think Sam Black played at the Pro Tour. And this is a deck that our friend Jadeen Klumperens wrote about the other day. This deck seems like it's getting a lot of hype. The three Secure the Waste, Wingmate Rock, Nissa, Elvish Visionary. Retreat to Emeria. Do you think this deck is real?
I think it's absolutely real. I mean, I've been saying for the past couple of days that I think, like, I think that Gideon is really well positioned in a tokens deck, and this seems like a really great home for him.
Mm-hmm. I have to say, I'm a little confused by the Hangerback Walker. Like, I get Hangerback Walker's good, but Jerry Thompson brought this up in an article the other day that there are so many decks that are just playing it just because.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm kind of not sure what role. I mean, it does make Thopter tokens, but I don't know. I'm starting to feel that way now. Like, I saw a deck the other day. I don't remember what it was, and it was like, oh yeah, it was Mono Green Ramp, And it was like, you know, Rattleclaw Mystic, Ulamog, four Hangerback Walker. And I'm like, what, are you ramping into Hangerback Walker? Like, why is this here? Like, I don't understand. And I'm just over it. I just don't.
I think he just kind of fills an awkward gap. Like, if you can't find another creature to play, since he's colorless, you can just jam him into any deck.
Yeah, you guys were talking about how, you know, you're really not looking forward to having to buy Jaces. And even though Hangerback Walker is only like $15 a piece, I am bitching and moaning my way to the game store. Like, I don't want to have to buy them, but I'm fairly positive I'm going to end up buying four Hangerback Walker. And I'm going to complain every step of the way until they're finally in my deck. And then I'll shut up about it. I just don't want to. The other deck that I thought was very interesting came in 22nd place. And this was a deck that was listed as Bant Aggro. Four Knight of the White Orchid, three Kithion. I don't think we've seen that, really. Four Seeker of the Way, four Monastery Mentor, also known as Old Pyromancer. Two Treasure Cruise, one Feat of Resistance. Three Valorous Dance, four Defiant Strikes. This kind of reminds me of the Bant Hexproof decks we were seeing, or Bant Heroic decks.
Bant Heroic, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I thought this was pretty nice, too. And also two copies of Myth Realized in the sideboard.
Interesting.
Yeah, I would. I mean, I love enchantments. I would totally play that. So.
Yeah, I have a friend who's been in the market for a new deck to play, and he's a big white weenie player, so I may show him this list and see if he likes it.
Yeah, I remember Autumn Burkett was a huge fan of Knight of the White Orchid in her green-white Megamorph deck, so I'm happy to see that card getting some love. Mm-hmm. Now, speaking of standard, Chris, you played at Game Day this past weekend.
I did.
How did it go?
It wasn't so hot, but it was interesting to get back into standard and kind of see, like, what the hell is going on. Because I must have missed a lot. I brewed up my own deck, which I don't normally do. Like, I'll try to see, like, is there something that's cool, on the rise, whatever. But I spent about a week trying to build Bug Elves. And I tweaked it a bunch and finally took a build with me that had Shaman of the Pact in it, some Lifespring Druids to try to, you know, be little mana dorks, of course. And then I was running, like, Skyrider Elf because he's just amazing and he flies and there's blue and that's cool. And Beastcaller, Savant. I like Beastcaller, Savant. I think that, you know, it's an awesome card. I mean, you can make any color mana if you tap him and he has haste. So if you have it, like, by turn two, you're swinging out. Maybe they don't have anything. And that's what I started figuring. If the format's going to be kind of slow with some stuff, he's not probably going to be the worst. And then I figure I could use some Nissas in there. I have Ruinous Path in there to take care of, like, their creatures, Lumbering Falls, and some other little elfy dorks and whatnot. And then my sideboard, I figured I'd just put in some Hand Disruption, some more kill spells, and some counters, because I can't live without counterspells. I've slowly kind of learned this. So I brought that with me. The first game that I played was versus, like, a green-blue ramp deck that had Kiora in it, Rattleclaw Mystic, and Bane of Balaged.
Ooh.
And, yeah.
What does that card do?
Bane of Balaged is the, I think it's a 7/5 Eldrazi.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then
it's a 7/5 Eldrazi, and whenever it attacks, an opponent has to exile two permanents. Mm-hmm. So it
basically has Annihilator.
Yeah, basically.
Okay. Yeah, so that really, though, was the only thing in the deck that I was really kind of scared of. Because I figured, well, I mean, how quickly is, you know, he honestly going to ramp into, like, these big Eldrazi? Kind of quick. So I was like, really? Okay. But, I mean, I was able to hold him at bay for certain things, like to try to kill, you know, some of his creatures or get the Eldrazi off the board, at least one of them at a time, because having two of them swinging at you is quite unpleasant, I will admit to that. But it was a fun deck to kind of see him pile. He had never played it before, and he was all like, I don't know if this works. I'm like, okay, well, that's, you know, I barely played my deck too, you know, let's see. So it was pretty cool. I thought he had a nice deck. So I ended up losing to him, I think, out of three, if I remember correctly. The second game I played versus my friend Steve. he usually plays a lot of Modern. He was playing Standard, and he was playing that Molten Vortex deck.
Ooh.
Yeah. Because I didn't know what he was playing at first. He's like, "Hent, I don't really care too much about playing Standard. I'm just playing this deck to, like, be annoying." And I was like, okay. So then he started playing, and I'm like, I see what your game is. So I had, like, a bunch of elves loaded up on the board, and then he was like, do 2 damage, do 2 damage, do 2 damage. I'm like, oh, shit. So basically, the way I won the 2 games that I did versus him was on the back of Lumbering Falls.
That hexproof, though.
Yes! I know, I'm just like, sweet, sweet hexproof.
So wait, did he have any creatures, or was it just like a Sphinx's tutelage deck? Like, what was going on there?
It was literally just like mountains, Molten Vortex, and some of like the red spells, like a Tormenting Voice, and I think he had, was it Fiery something or other, the one that does the 2 damage, 3 if you have the sorcery.
Fiery Impulse?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
He had like that in there, but it really wasn't. There wasn't any creatures. It was just that. So then it was, you know, do damage. And then you think he had something else in there that was like, maybe like some burn spells or some craziness. But that was basically all it was. So I was like, shit. I'm like, I don't want to lose to this. So yeah, I rode a Lumbering Falls and to the win. So I swept him. And then third round, I promptly got my teeth kicked in very badly by an Omnath Locus of Rage deck.
Ooh.
Yes. So, dude ramped into that, and he, like, made a bunch of tokens, and, like, I think he had Kiora 2, if I remember correctly. So, Kiora is obviously being played, at least by those two people. I don't know about what it'll be like when I kind of scope out FNM this week. But, yeah, that was kind of a slaughter, to say the least.
Did either one of them get any octopuses from her ultimate?
Nope.
Oh, okay. That's what I would have been. I wouldn't have been mad if I lost to octopuses.
No octopuses, octopi, octo whatever. None of them were made. Nope. That was pretty much it. And then the last round I played versus basically just blue white control with Dragonlord Ojutai, and it was kind of a hard match to try to just deal with Ojutai and then his counter spells. I had to board in my counter spells and everything. But he did this one thing that just drives me crazy. I do not like, and sorry to anyone if they're listening and you do this, I do not like when people pile all their mana into one little pile. Mm-hmm. And then they, like, leave it there because then you can't see, like, how much mana they have untapped. So the second game I said, I'm going to request this next game that you please lay out your mana so I can see what you have untapped, what you got going on, because when it's in a pile like that, I have no idea. I'm not going to count, you know, this stack. But I ended up losing to that, unfortunately. But it was interesting to kind of see what people are brewing up in Standard. It gave me a chance to try to make my own deck. And people are like, you know, sweet deck. So I just want to make some little tweaks to it and then get back to it. But I don't want to tweak it too much so that it's not my deck anymore, because then you get to a point where it's like, oh, we'll take these out and then put this in just because it's good. I don't give a shit if it's good. I like having a deck that has its own flavor to it. I like something that follows its own little storyline, or it has a theme. Like, I just don't want to put stuff in it just because it'll maybe win. I'd like it to be like a cohesive entity. Maybe that's just me, but that's just how I like to play if possible. So I guess I could put Hangerback Walkers in there, but why? Like, I don't need them. This is an elves deck. I want it to be about elves. And if they're sucky elves, then they're sucky elves. But they're my sucky elves. So yeah. That was my adventure at game day. I think Chris Preston made top 8 and we were surprised. Like, I don't even know. But yeah, so I was happy for him, and good times were had, even though I didn't do so well because I got to play my deck, and I was happy that I made it on my own without anyone else's help.
Chris, so let me ask you this. Oh, I'm sorry.
Sorry. Chris, can I make a suggestion for your deck?
Yeah.
Have you tried or thought of Green Warden of Murasa?
Ooh.
Mm-mm.
So I think it's a 6 drop, and it's pretty large, but it's the card that has, like, the Eternal Witness effect.
Oh, yeah.
And The reason why I thought of it was because a lot of elf decks in the past have ramped into a large creature, like usually Craterhoof Behemoth, but it seems like the elf deck right now doesn't have like a big thing to ramp into. And the cool thing about Green Warden is it allows you to like more aggressively trade off your shamans, and then you can like get them back and then dome people again.
Oh, that's true. I'm writing this down right now. Green Warden. All right. That's going to go in my little revamp deck. Elves 2, Electric Boogaloo.
So let me ask you this, Chris, and I certainly don't mean to put you on the spot or anything, so I apologize if I'm doing that, but I, you know, you were saying that you like decks to have your own sort of flair to them, and that you're not necessarily interested in putting a card in just because it's good or it's something that everybody's recommending. Does that kind of extend to Modern? Because I remember the night before States, I had looked at several other Mono Blue Tron lists that all seemed to have similar cards in common, and I remember asking you, like, you know, well, I noticed your deck doesn't have this, and you were like, nope, not interested, and I was just like, why wouldn't you want these cards? And does that extend to like all of your decks, or is that something you were just sort of feeling with this one?
I guess, well, I can't speak for Legacy because we haven't gotten there yet. Mm-hmm. Modern so far, I like going outside the box if it's something that still works, but I definitely don't want to just go with just what everybody says is good for sure. I mean, I made some tweaks before we left. I just put some spells back in, but overall, the meat of the deck was pretty much still the same.
Okay.
So I like having my own little tweak to it.
Okay. Because like I said, I was just curious, because I remember there were cards that were almost, you know, what you could call universal, and like I noticed that you weren't using the talismans and things like that, and I was like, hey, you know, how come you don't have talismans? And you're like, I didn't like them. And I'm like, well... Did they do something wrong? Nope, just didn't like them. And I was like, okay. And I was just trying to get a feel for like what kind of player you were, so that way I don't, you know, bother you with those questions anymore, and I can just sort of let you do your thing. But I was really curious. That's all.
Oh no, that's cool. And I put the talisman back in.
Okay, good. See, I felt so bad afterwards. I was like, oh god, did I come too strong? Did I? Okay.
I'm the same way with decks. Like, I mean, I think I net deck a lot more than Chris in a lot of regards. But if somebody at a tournament is like, hey, why don't you play this card? I'm like, why? And then they better have, like, a damn good reason. And then we'll sit there and we'll argue about it for, like, 10 minutes. And I'll be like, mm-mm. And then as soon as they finally, like, make a good point, I'm like, you're right, I'll try it next time. But it takes me, like, a long time. Like, I will just sit there and argue with them. And then all of a sudden, I'm just like, okay. And they're like, "What? Okay, what? I thought it sounded like you hated it." And I'm like, no, it's fine now. It's fine now.
Well, that's what we did with my sideboard. Aaron's like, why do you need this? And what is this one for? And what's this one for? I'm like, for this? But I mean, I think that my sideboard right now for Modern actually isn't bad. Because even if a lot of them are a lot of onesies, I'd rather know that it could cover a wide variety of decks rather than just have one sometimes, like, or have a card that's, you know, good versus these three decks. I mean, if I lose, to, you know, burn, well, I guess it was my time. But, you know, I didn't do too badly against it at States. So, you know, I think it's just a tweaking experience, at least for Modern. For Standard, I don't even know. That's a whole pile of mess right now.
Yeah, I'm the type of person where I won't knock it until I've tried it, but if I've tried it and I hate it, I'll knock the shit out of it. In Legacy, for example, there's a lot of hype around Street Wraith in Dredge, which is something that typically Manalist Dredge uses. Lion's Eye Diamond Dredge normally doesn't fuck with it, but there have been some people lately that feel like Careful Study is redundant with Faithless Looting, because they basically do the same thing, except Careful Study is blue, it doesn't have flashback. So people were going, well, why don't you use Street Wraith, and that way you could, you know, possibly dredge an extra card. You can also dredge at instant speed in response to a Deathrite Shaman activation or things like that. And at first glance, I was just like, girl, no, like, that's stupid. And then, you know, I'm thinking about it, and I'm like, well, okay. So now I have three or four in my deck, and I'm trying them out, and I'm at least giving people the benefit of the doubt. But if I do decide that I don't like it, people will never hear the end of it. But I at least try. You know, at least want to have a case, you know. Speaking of Legacy, SCG St. Louis was this past weekend, and Tom Ross won the whole damn thing with Infect. God bless Tom Ross, man. I learned so much from him at the Community Cup, and he's just an absolute doll. He's been on a bit of a tear lately. I was very happy to see him doing well. Another spicy deck that I saw, a spicy deck that I saw that came in fourth place, Reliquary Retreat.
Yeah,
this was a deck that I've seen people messing around with in Modern, but I didn't think it was going to make that much of an impact in Legacy.
Right. So, Hallie, walk me through this, because I'm not really sure I understand what's going on. So you have Knight of the Reliquary, and then you have Retreat to Coral Helm. So if I'm understanding this correctly, you feed a land, so you tap the Reliquary, sacrifice a forest or plains, search your library for land, put it on the battlefield, and then shuffle your library. And so you put the land into play, landfall trigger from Retreat to untap the Knight. And then just do that a bunch of times?
You just do that a bunch of times. Or you could scry if that's more valuable to you at the time.
Okay, and then you have a big fuck-off Knight.
Yeah.
And then how do you get her through any blockers or anything like that?
I mean, I guess you have removal. You have Swords to Plowshares. You have counter spells. The one thing about this deck that I found a little suspicious was that it's playing four copies of Force of Will and not a lot of other blue cards. That was a little weird to me. But I guess, like, it has other win conditions. It has Sigarda. It has, you know, Green Sun, so it can tutor for any number of creatures to answer certain problems. Green-White has no shortage of, you know, hate bears or creatures that do certain jobs. But I think this deck is interesting and would like to see how it evolves, but I'm not sure I'm sold on this particular version of it.
Do you think that it's more likely to be successful in Legacy, or do you think it can do just as well in Modern or better?
I'm not sure. I haven't actually seen it in action. I know that Jeff Hoogland has been messing around with it a bit, but I don't know. I'm curious to see what it does.
Okay. Yeah, the people on stream were just like, is this real? Like, what? Like, are we watching this happen? And then all of a sudden it kept doing better and better, and then it made top eight. And people were like, well, I guess we gotta give it a little bit of respect. It managed to top eight. So the other deck that I was very interested in is called an Imperial Painter deck. I don't know if you guys are familiar with this. Okay. Chris, Katie, do you know what it is?
That's where they, like, make your deck all one color and then they mill you? Is that the right one?
Yep.
Yeah.
I was not aware, I don't think.
Well, for those who are not aware, I will tell you guys about it. I think this is a fabulous deck. I think Ruben Bressler is a big fan of this deck, so I'm pretty sure he'll be happy to see that it did well. So Imperial Painter is a deck that revolves around a card called Painter's Servant. And Painter's Servant is an artifact creature that costs 2 from the Lorwyn block, and when it comes into play, you choose a color. And all cards that are not in play, spells and permanents, are the chosen color in addition to the other colors. So you can be like, everything is green. And then you play a card called Grindstone. Grindstone costs 1. It's an artifact. You pay 3 and tap it. Put the top 2 cards of target player's library into that player's graveyard. If both cards share at least one color, do it again. So because Painter's Servant makes everything you own one color, you just keep doing it until your opponent's dead.
And then you win.
Yeah. Day. It's like Sphinx's tutelage on crack.
It's not so funny. And then you win. Yay.
And then you play cards like Ensnaring Bridge, which prevent your opponent from attacking you because your hand is going to be quite small. You can also put in things like Imperial Recruiter to help you look for artifacts that cost less than 2. Other spicy things like Mages of the Moon in the main deck, either Sworn Canonist. This is a pretty... I know this is a deck I certainly don't want to face as Dredge. 4 Blood Moon in the main. It's a bad deal. But I was still happy to see it do well.
So
there was an article going around the other day by a young man named Brian DeMars, who writes for Star City Games, and this article really got people talking. It was about the concept of good game, which is the thing that most people will say to you at the end of a match, and whether or not its time has come, whether or not we should outgrow this phrase. And I thought Brian wrote a really nice article about that. I thought he stated his case really well. Among some of the points that he brought up, he says that good game is something that was ingrained in us as children because we were incapable of understanding more complex ideas, and it was a way to sort of, you know, teach kids on a really basic level how to treat their opponents and how to be competitive. But that it's something that we as adults should not necessarily still you know, be honoring, and that there are exceptions to the rule and that we are able to determine that, whereas kids may not necessarily be able to do that. He also says that in sports, because people like to use the argument, well, they say good game in sports, so why don't we say it in magic? He says that, you know, in sports, you're given a minute to process your loss, and that after the game is over, the handshakes are not immediate. The team gets to go to their locker room or their bench, and then there's a couple minutes to process, and then they get to come back for that sort of ceremony of shaking hands. And I thought this was really good. You know, I certainly have opposed the gesture for a while. Hallie, what did you think about this?
I agreed with a lot of Brian's points. I think one of the unfortunate things about our language is that the more you use certain phrases, the less meaning they have. And when you say GG so many times, it just kind of loses its meaning. And, you know, so many people say good game when it, you know, sometimes it wasn't actually a good game. And it makes people feel bad when, you know, they've had a bad match and someone says good game and their response is no, it wasn't. I actually had an opponent who beat me pretty soundly, and I had just started playing Magic and I was new, and I didn't really care that I lost as long as I was learning something. So I said, you know, good game at the end of the match, and my opponent was like, it wasn't a good game, I completely stomped your face. And I was just like, oh, okay, you just made this really awkward. But yeah, I agree that you should try to have more of a conversation with your opponent and be a compassionate human being after your match ends, because some of the other phrases that people have started leaning on instead of good game also become kind of empty and meaningless. Like, I've heard people say, you know, thanks for the games instead of saying good game or something like that. My problem with that is that so often that comes from people who win. If I'm playing a game and I lose, so often my opponent will say something like, thanks for the games, and that kind of gives me a weird feeling, like, what are you thanking me for? I don't exactly understand. Like, that doesn't really make sense in this context. Like, you're thanking me for losing to you? This is weird. So I try to have an actual conversation with people. If I lose to a friend, I always ask them how they sideboarded. Sometimes if I lose to someone who isn't a friend, I still ask them how they sideboarded, and we have a good and productive conversation. Also, if I am playing against a new player and I win the match, I try to have a conversation with them about their deck and try to be friendly, because I want them to continue to come back to the game store and enjoy the game, even though they're new and they're not winning so much. So I agree that, you know, you should make it more of a conversation and less about this sort of obligation to say something when really, I don't know, it doesn't really that matter that much.
I think I sound like an ass compared to Hallie. I'm a less is more kind of person, like whether I win or lose. I don't like doing chit-chat and all of that. So, like, if I win, or even if I lose, usually I just say, like, good luck in your next round. And, like, that's it. And if it seems like they, you know, if they initiate a conversation and want to talk and I'm not, you know, upset about losing or not pressed for time or anything, I'll sit there and talk to them. But I'm definitely not an initiator. I like to process my losses in silence, and I don't like it when people keep talking to me afterwards, so I just don't try and do that to other people either. I just, good luck in your next round, and I don't like shaking people's hands, whether it was good or not, because I don't like their germiness on me, so I try and just keep my hands on my side of the table, and then I just leave. So I guess I'm not as friendly as Hallie.
I think that all comes down to personal preference. I mean, like, I think that every person has the right to decide whether or not they thought their game was good. You know, and I don't think that it makes you being a salty loser or an asshole if you felt that even that you lost and you're upset about it. Like, I don't condone, I guess, necessarily throwing furniture or anything, but if you're just going to be like, you know, you would prefer not to, you know, agree that the game was good, I think you're completely entitled to that. I don't really, like, say any of those phrases, like, unless someone says it to me first, and I guess I sort of agree or I'm just indifferent, maybe I'll say it back to them. But it's not really something that I actively, I guess, think about. If I lose and I am upset about it, I will normally just get very quiet. And I'll kind of just kind of internalize all my anger and or sadness at myself. I know it's not my opponent's fault. There's mistakes that I made, or maybe there was just nothing I could have done. And I take that out on me. If I've ever been, not necessarily rude, but like short with people afterwards, it's because they did something that I didn't like. I've only refused a handshake once, and that was versus the gentleman I talked about that I played at the Open, because I did not feel that our games were good. I did not want to shake his hand. The whole experience just left me feeling very, like, confused and just angry. And I was like, I can't even right now. Like, I need 5 minutes. But I think if two people, like, were having fun, you were joking around, you had a good experience with one another, I don't think that there's any reason not to acknowledge that in some way. I don't know that good game is necessarily it, especially, you know, someone lost. At the end of the day, there can only be one person that wins. And maybe it's you, maybe it's the other person. And sometimes people do take it badly. I saw people on Twitter saying, oh, well, I've never, you know, known anyone that took good game in a poor way. It's like, really? Because I could name you like five. So, you know, maybe not on your level. So maybe not on your level, but I mean, it doesn't feel good to lose. I mean, I don't know how many people would admittedly be like, you know, I like losing. Feels fucking great. You know, no one would ever say that to you. And the whole, like, losing with grace thing. Like,
I hate that phrase. Hate it.
Yeah. Like, I don't know where that comes from. I don't know why people always say, well, so-and-so should be the bigger person and you should do this. It's like, well, nobody says I have to. You know, you're entitled to your feelings, whether they, I guess, upset someone else or not. I just think that, you know, good game does make things worse for certain people, and maybe we have to kind of reevaluate what we should do instead, or just handle everything on a case-by-case basis, because what you might think is not offensive to you might be offensive to someone else, and you might come off really poorly and not realize it, and you don't want to make any enemies in the Magic community.
Yeah, I used to be somebody who did not like, you know, when people said good game against me in bad situations. So specifically, let's say you're playing a deck like Boggles. And they, you know, they take a Geist of St. Traft, or back when it was just Ghost Pants, or when it was Ban Hexproof, when it was standard legal, you know, you'd have like a Geist of St. Traft and you'd put a Rancor on it and you'd put an Ethereal Armor on it, and you're just like, fuck, man, like what was I supposed to do about this? You know, I had no recourse. There was literally nothing I could have done about that card. And people would say good game to me, I would get very upset about it. And it was never that I was getting upset at the person. It was never personal. It was more the idea that this phrase was acceptable in this situation, because I didn't think it was. And especially as I've come to play more broken decks, like because I am playing Ad Nauseam and because I am playing Dredge, I'm a lot more aware of how unfair it can be sometimes. You know, if you're playing Burn and we're in Legacy, and I reanimate a turn one Iona and name red, there's nothing you can do. Like, you are officially not participating in this game. I'm not going to say good game to you because it was not a good game. I completely screwed you over. And I'm aware of that. You know, I know because I play these busted decks. You know, I know I can tell when my opponent has put up a fight, you know, if they've been able to, maybe they destroyed my Lotus Bloom, or maybe they, you know, destroyed my lands, or they put out the Grafdigger's Cage. Okay, cool. You know, you made me work for it. There was a little bit of a back and forth, but, you know, I'm a lot more aware of when a game is one-sided. And so because of that, I don't really say good game. I think I agree with Paulo the most on this. Paulo said that his personal etiquette is that say good luck and that you let the person who lost decide if it was a good game. And I really like that mentality. You know, I have had people say that. You know, there have been people that I've beat, and they were like, you know what, you really kept me on my toes. I really wish you good luck. This was a really good game. And I like that, letting the person who lost decide, because I feel like it's a bit more honest that way. You know, it's easier for you to say good game because you won. I mean, what's there to be unhappy about? You know, I don't know anybody who's won. I don't know many people who have won and been like, I don't feel good about this. Like, no. Usually you walk away and you're like, oh my God, and you go back to your friends and you eat Chex Mix and you have a really good time. And I understand that. And the thing that really bothered me about this whole debate was seeing the really extreme reactions to this. Like, there were people on Twitter that were like, if somebody's going to get offended at Good Game, you need to never be around them because they're terrible people. And I'm like, why? Like, how did this happen? And Lee Sharp said something really good about that. He said, I don't think people should be bothered, but also I recognize that some people are bothered. And even if it's something that doesn't offend you, realizing that some people do get offended by it is a big thing. And it's a really, you know, mature thing to think and to say. And it doesn't make them bad people or anything like that. And I was just really, you know, sad to see some of those responses where it's like, fuck those people. It's like, no, like, it just doesn't have to be like that. And so I was really happy to see that this discussion was at least brought up. And, you know, I certainly have a personal stake in it. And it was nice to see people feel the way that I do.
Mm-hmm.
So I also don't like it. I really related to Brian's point about giving people a minute. That is one thing that really tilts me. Like, at States even the other day, it was like the one person I lost to was like, you know, do you know what you did wrong? And I was like, I haven't even signed the slip yet. Like, I literally just shuffled up my cards. And furthermore, I didn't ask you. Like, you know, there are certainly matchups where it's like, oh God, you know, can I ask what I could have done better? Like, can I ask what you brought in? But if I didn't ask you and not even a minute has gone by, I don't want your feedback. And I've explicitly told them, like, I'm really not looking for feedback right now. And I think it's so important to just give people a minute, you know, just let people, you know, because if you give me a minute, I'm probably going to lose some of that. You know, I'll probably be a lot more relaxed and a lot more calm. But putting your hand in my face seconds after you beat me, demanding a handshake, you know, demanding to tell me what it, demanding to give me feedback, absolutely not. No.
Yeah, I mean, maybe this is just me, but I really, like, don't like handshakes, like, in any aspect. And it's like, when somebody puts their hand out, like, even if it was a good game, oftentimes I'm like, you know, I don't shake hands. Like, not right now, just all the time. It's not an activity I do. But I don't know. I never want to shake other people's, like, I don't want to stick my hand in somebody's face, because what if they don't like shaking hands? Like, that feels like a very personal thing to me, and I just don't like it.
I will say that I will refuse a handshake if there's been some sort of uncleanliness that has happened. Like, if they've coughed in their hand, I won't shake their hand. Also, if they're nail biters. There was one time I saw somebody who was really nervous and biting his fingers, his nails in between the thing, and then afterwards he was like, good game! And I'm like, no. And so in those situations, I won't do that either. I'm just like, I saw you put that hand in your mouth and just, yeah, I can't do that.
Don't feel bad, Katie. Nick doesn't shake hands with peeps either. Like, we were talking about that, like, this morning. He's like, no. He's like, I don't shake people's hands. He's like, it's just not what I do. Like, I don't know them. They're a stranger. I just have a thing. So I think it's perfectly natural for people not to want to shake hands. I will say your aversion to it does remind me of, like, if you were, like, in the Old West and you had to, like, do, like, a duel with, like, somebody or whatever, and they both appear in the street, and it's like someone's extending their hand to you and, like, rawhide hits or whatever, and it's like, you know.
And then I'm like, was that so scary? No thanks.
Was that supposed to be Western? It sounded like disco.
It's supposed to be Western.
Okay. It's like a Western disco where you, like, walk in doing, like, the disco in your, like, chaps and whatnot.
Let's see, we didn't promise good sound effects. We need to listen to MTA Cast for that.
So, Katie, I know some people at cons, you know, because they don't want to get con crud, they will do something else, like a fist bump. Are you opposed to that, too?
A fist bump is okay, but if I lost a match, I don't want to fist bump you, I don't think.
Oh, sure.
But, no, like, in general, bumps are fine. I do a lot of elbow bumps, like, instead of high fives.
Elbow bumps, okay.
And I do high five, like, the people I normally hang out with, because I feel like our germs are probably shared anyway when we're, like, testing all the time and whatnot, but there's...
Well, clearly, because you're sick today.
Yeah, I know. Should have elbow bumped and not high fived. Mistakes were made.
She's going on and on. She's like, you know, I just don't like germs from people I don't know. I just like it really clean, like, totally. clean, like I am feeling right now. Like, hey.
Oh my God. So in undergrad, so I have a big microbiology background, and part of the things we had to do was, like, you know, we take a swab on our hand and grow it on an auger plate. And after I saw that, I was like, I don't want anybody else's fuzz on me. Like, that's fucking disgusting. It was just downright gross. I don't kiss my parents either, so.
Wait, you just said you don't kiss your parents? Nope.
I don't think I do. I don't think anyone does.
I mean, a lot of people, like, kiss each other, like, on the cheek or whatever. Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
No, that's okay. I think that's Europe, question mark, or whatever. Wow. I don't think that's customary around here. Katie, like, when you say elbow bump, like, what kind of elbow bump are we talking here? Because the only elbow bump I can think of, personally, is the one from Rocky Horror Picture Show that Riff Raff and Magenta do. So I just want to, like, know if that's a deal. Because if it is, I'm totally supportive of that.
It's like when I hold up a chicken wing, and then they hold up a chicken wing, and then our elbows touch each other's elbows quickly.
Okay.
That is bizarre.
Or it's kind of like T-Rex-esque. Okay.
Yeah.
I can maybe get, like, behind that.
Like the chicken dance? Like
yeah, kind of. You just hold out your elbow and you bump them. Like, if you have your hands full and somebody wants to give you a high five, oftentimes people elbow. No, is it just me? It might just be me.
It may okay. just be you.
Well, see, now we have to take a picture in Oakland of us all doing, like, the chicken wing, like, elbow bump.
Yeah.
I guess. Like a how-to video?
Somebody on Twitter needs to give me a shout-out and confirmation that I'm not the only one that does elbow bumps, because they are a real deal.
Okay. Yeah, I'm literally trying to do it on my... Like, I'm sitting at my chair, like, practicing. I just can't help but feel like a chicken. Like, I'm...
Yeah, you just do, like, a quick like one. Like, you just... You reel your hand in towards your armpit, and then you just kind of hold your elbow out, and then you guys bump each other with your elbow bones.
It just looks kind of random. Like, if I saw you doing that, like, let's say I was looking at you from across the room at a GP, and I saw you just, I'd be like, what is she on? Like,
yeah, I also have really pointy elbows, and I'd be worried that I'd hurt someone or, like, accidentally move the wrong way and put somebody's eye out.
Well, you're not, like, swinging full force, Hallie. You're not, like, getting out of control or anything. It's just it's like a fist bump, you know? You're not punching through their body or anything. You just...
I mean, you could.
Yeah.
I can see it now, you know, that somebody's going to tweet a link to the Magic Judges blog, and they'll be like, you know, level 2 judge Catherine Neal was recently, you know, suspended temporarily for a physical altercation involving elbow bumps, and you're just going to elbow some poor bastard and, you know, hurt them. And
I hope not.
Rombos.
I just shouldn't touch anyone. I should just be in a little bubble.
Wouldn't it be great, though, if you were, and then they could just roll you towards the tables that needs assistance?
Oh my God, that'd be excellent.
Or we'll get you a straitjacket.
I want to, what if I have to, like, get away or something? I gotta, gotta have my movement.
That's what feet are for.
I need my arms to run, or else if I fall off on my face. This conversation is really devolved.
Right? All right, so let's get back on track. So Katie and Hallie, you two have recently started testing together, and I think you had your first session this past weekend.
We did.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and how did that go? Like, what is your process?
It went pretty well. We just went on Skype, just kind of like we do for the show, and we actually use video cameras, and we, like, pointed the webcams down so we could clearly see our board states, like our lands and creatures and whatever, and we just played Magic. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, we had started out where Hallie was like, well, we could test on Modo. And I was like, Hallie, I'm really poor. I can't afford to test on Modo. What if we just, like, you know, made some decks and then pointed our cameras at them? And it'd be like we're playing Magic. And it worked out really well.
Mm. So did one of you have, like, a gauntlet? Like, were one of you playing the proxy decks? Or were you playing just both? Were you both playing, like, just real legit decks?
I was playing the proxy decks, or the partially proxied decks. Katie was playing Brooke's deck that he won Standard States with, which he described as 4 Jaces, 4 Ugins, and Filler. And I played a Tarka Red and Abzan, and the matchups were incredibly lopsided, we figured out.
Yes.
when I played a Tarka Red, I think I won all but one of the games.
Yeah.
And then when I played Abzan, Katie won all but one of the games.
Yeah. Mm. And we did do some, like, sideboarding and stuff, but the one game I won against Tatarka Red, I won at, like, 2 or 3 life. And I was like, thank goodness this version's not playing Burn Spells. But Hallie's decks really weren't that proxied. They had, like, Wooded Foothills that were proxied, and that's it, so...
I don't have enough Wooded Foothills to go around.
And Brooke's deck costs, like, more than my house, so... Like, all of his basic lands are the Judge lands. They're, like, Judge basics, and he's got, like, all old fetches, and everything's, like, foil. It's, like... I thought we were going to have, like, a glare problem because it's so foiled that I thought Hallie wouldn't be able to see the cards.
And all his BFZ lands were Expeditions also. I was just like, Brooke, get out of here with that.
Oh, man. Well, now I know why you're with him, Katie.
Boy likes to trade. That's like his favorite activity. Like, sometimes we'll go to F&M and we won't even play, but he's like, just give me a minute, I gotta trade. And then it's like 4 hours later, like on SpongeBob, and that, like, sign is held up, and then I'm like, Brooke, are you ready? And he's like, just one more minute. And I'm like, oh god, I don't know how you do this for so long. But
you're just sitting in the corner practicing your elbow bumps
with myself.
So is this something that you two are planning on doing until Oakland happens?
Probably. Yeah. I mean, it went pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I want to proxy up the other Jeskai Black, because this Jeskai Black was much more, like, controlling, but I'd like to try the version with creatures and stuff, so probably mostly, like, a weekend thing, I think.
Hallie, how has your Facebook group been doing? It looks like it's taken off.
It's been doing really well. We have 30 members now. And we've been getting a pretty good mix of people at different skill levels. I know there have been some women who have been posting about, just getting into competitive Magic and wanting tips from other players. And there are some women whose names I recognize because they've had, you know, really good finishes at tournaments. So I think we have a pretty good mix.
Cool. I hope you're able to coordinate some other, like, Skype sessions or things like that for the other girls, or possibly, like, group efforts.
Yeah, that would be really cool if people are interested in that. I know a couple of us who are on Magic Online have been sort of trading usernames and becoming buddies and seeing if we can coordinate things. Like, I know Morgan, a friend of the show who lives in Wisconsin with Aaron and Chris, she and I were talking a little bit on Twitter about possibly playing Standard together, so I'm hoping that we can get more people in on that and maybe make that more of a group thing.
Mm-hmm. And you recently invested in a Standard deck on Modo.
I did. I invested in Abzan. I was sort of torn between Abzan and Jeskai Black, and it ultimately came down to money for me, as many things on Modo do. I looked at the prices of cards on MTGO Traders, and I saw that... the cost of the Abzan deck, like the entire deck, minus obviously cards that I had from drafting, was just a little bit more than the cost of 4 Jaces.
Wow.
So I went with the Abzan deck. and, I mean, hopefully if I do decide to play Jeskai Black, I will be able to either trade into it or get enough cards on Modo that I can make it work. But... I don't know. I'm rolling with Abzan for now. I have some prior experience playing Abzan aggro, and the deck plays fairly similarly. It has a lot of overlap in terms of, you know, some of the same creatures, some of the same interactions, so I'm hoping that I'll have some success with it.
We were also going to try, maybe down the line, depending on how motivated we are, to see if we could stream our testing sessions.
Yeah.
And trying to figure that out. Later.
Yeah. I'm not sure exactly how to do that, but I can, like, fiddle around with OBS and see what I can do.
Yeah.
Well, I would love to see that, and I think some of mm-hmm. our listeners would, too.
Yeah. And it'd be good to get, you know, a lot of feedback all at one time on different plays and stuff, so.
Yeah, absolutely. Because people love, you know, I know, Katie, they were looking forward to your stream. And then people got a taste of Hallie's stream, and then she stopped. So there's definitely, I think, an audience for you two streaming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. I think now that I have a standard deck, I mean, once I get a little bit more comfortable with playing standard on Modo, and once I'm not sick, I will probably go back to streaming a couple times a week if I can settle on a good schedule for it.
Sweet. Yeah, I did a test stream the other day just to see if I could pull it off. And, you know, Twitch has so many features to it, and so does OBS. And I'm pretty sure, you know, I'm not looking to become the next Cheon or anything, but I'd at least like to, you know, have a decent, you know, stream that people can watch. So I'm starting to spruce up my stream as well. So, listener question this week. Be sure to send your questions to thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. And this one's a very light and easy question from a young man named Nick. Chris, you know this young man?
Yeah. I said to him, why are you sending questions to my podcast? He's like, I'm a listener.
So I'm a listener.
We'll allow it.
This question came from Chris's boyfriend, who we love. And it's funny, because when I saw the name Nick Miller, I thought it was the young man from Star City Games. And I was like, ooh, we got a well-known fan. And then I'm like, wait a minute. I'm like, his email address doesn't look very Star City. So I text Chris, and I'm like, Chris, what is your man's email? And then she texts me back with the email address, and I'm like, your man just sent us a listener question. What is going on here? So Nicholas says, hello, and I love how, like, well-written it is, good punctuation, everything. So bravo to him. Nicholas says, I love the show and have enjoyed every episode. I'm trying to plan a Halloween draft for play at my local game store and have been thinking of buying a box of Innistrad for the event. However, before committing to that kind of cost, I wanted your opinions. What set have you had the most fun drafting? Thank you all, and continue your excellence.
I think Innistrad is probably the most Halloween appropriate because of the gothic horror theme and everything.
Yeah.
I know at least two stores in my area are having Innistrad drafts. One is having one the night before Halloween, and one is having one on Halloween. So I'm going to be going to one of those. I do like drafting Innistrad. I think it's a good investment. I actually invested in a box of Innistrad myself, so I'm hoping to draft that soon. But Innistrad is one of a couple of my favorite draft sets. It's triple Innistrad is great. I also like Khans of Tarkir draft. That was my favorite set that I've drafted since I've started playing Magic. And then I also really like Zendikar draft. I know I'm kind of in a little bubble somewhere with Rich Hagen, where we both like Zendikar draft more than Rise of the Eldrazi draft. And people tell us we're crazy. I don't know. I just really enjoy the speed of the format, and I think that in itself is kind of different and skill testing in its own ways. I also love the Allies deck in that format. So yeah, those are my three favorites.
I haven't really drafted a boatload, but this morning when I got up, I heard the new episode of Magic the Amateuring, and they were both talking about how much they really like drafting Battle for Zendikar. So I started thinking, like, maybe I should start drafting that set if, like, everybody's jonesing for it, like, crack. Like, it might be kind of cool to check out some more. So I haven't really had too much experience with drafting. Not opposed to it. Like it. I don't know. I was not playing when Innistrad came out. I kind of got in a little later than that. But if he does it, I'm playing.
I would hope so. Like, I'd hope you wouldn't be excluded from your boyfriend's draft.
Yeah, but like, if he was like, I want to get together with the guys and draft, to be like, see, no, I'm coming to draft.
I started playing the week of the M13 pre-release, so I did one draft, and I think we did triple Avacyn Restored, if I remember correctly. And I was, like, really stressed out. Like, I'd been playing Magic for, like, 4 days. And I didn't really even know how, like, the turn structure went. I didn't know what the stack was. I remember this is, like, the week where I met Brooke, and somebody did something in response to something I did. And I was like, Brooke, I think this guy's trying to cheat. I think he's trying to cheat. Can you come over here and see this? And he was like, no, this is normal. And I was like, what? He can do just whatever he wants? And then that's when I learned about the stack, and I was really frustrated. But, so drafting was really stressful for me. Like, I don't even remember what kind of deck I made or anything, but I remember all the cards were, like, piling up behind me because I was, like, trying to read every card, and then I just kind of started picking them, like, really fast, and I was like, this one's green, that must be good. This one's green, that must be good. But I was really stressed out. So that was my only experience with anything in an Innistrad block. But since then, I think Return to Ravnica is my favorite draft set. I really enjoy, you know, all the colors, so I think that's the draft that I've had the most fun playing.
Yeah, my favorite, I don't really like drafting. I know people can't believe that. Like, they're like, everybody loves to draft. How can you not love to draft? I just don't. Like, I've turned down so many offers of, like, you know, you want to come draft with this person and this person that are really big name? No. No, and every time the mothership has these streamer events, it's like, oh, well, maybe you should get your computer up and running. Is it construct? No, no, and I'd have to draft, and I just have no interest in drafting. I will say the first set that made me enjoy drafting was Khans of Tarkir, and that was only because what I would do is when the first pack would go around, I would pull nothing but lands. And then when packs 2 and 3 would go around, I would then take cards to sort of fill in the deck then, like having all of these lands and all the colors. And then that helped me narrow down what kind of deck I wanted to build. And I almost always had a functional deck. I almost always felt good about the decks that I had built. And it just felt so effortless. It didn't really feel like I had to try. It didn't really feel, and maybe some people think that's a bad sign. Like maybe that's too easy. But, you know, for somebody like me, you know, I, as I've said before, I don't have the eye for seal. You know, like if you, I don't really know much about signals. I don't know much about, you know, oh, well, this color fits this curve, which fits this plot. I don't know what you're talking about. So Khans was really up my alley, and that was something I actually enjoyed drafting. And if people were saying, hey, you want to draft Khans, you know, that was the first set that I would really just sort of jump in and be like, yes, I'd love to draft. And, you know, I can't really speak to... I'd heard things about Khans, Fate, and Dragons, that wasn't such a good scene, but I would totally draft Khans again. So if anybody has a box of Khans and you want to draft, give me a call. I'm very interested, and that's my scene right there.
Yeah, one thing that I'm thinking about doing is after Khans is no longer in Standard, I'm thinking of taking a bunch of my Khans block cards and making, I guess what you could call, like, a set cube for it. So mm-hmm. You take, like, 4 of all the commons and 2 of all the uncommons and 1 of all the rares and mythics and kind of sorting those and making sort of simulated packs like you would with a cube and then just drafting it whenever you want. So if I do that, you're invited.
Absolutely. Cool. I can't wait. So our final thoughts this week, I want to kind of chime in first. So I've decided to undergo a bit of a mission or a quest, if you will. Starting today, I'm going to try to qualify for the Season 12 Magic Online Championship Series preliminary event.
Yay.
In December. So for those who don't know, every month they have these events called these MOX preliminary events, and you have to earn 15 qualifier points to buy yourself a spot into them. And this month it happens to be Legacy, which I like Legacy. Normally it's formats I couldn't give a shit about, but I was really excited about Legacy. And if you earn 15 points, you qualify for the preliminary, and if you win the preliminary, or if you do reasonably well, you earn a seat in the finals. Or you can earn 35 or more qualifier points and just buy your seat into the finals directly. So this is something I've never really done before. I've never really set myself a goal and then worked towards it. Like, I've never had an event that I'm like, okay, this is the event. You've got 3 weeks. This is your schedule. Go. And so I figured out how many dailies I need to play, and ideally I have to do well in, like, half of them in order to earn the 15 points. So starting tomorrow, I will be playing in dailies just about every day of the week and trying to earn the 3-1 or better record to earn qualifier points. And then I have a month to do that. And that's about 40 dailies or so, because I'm going to do multiple dailies on the weekends. And this is my grind that I'm going to do. So if you want to wish me luck or you want to support me, I could certainly use some tickets because I may have to go through several events to earn the points. So if anybody's feeling generous, you can send me your Magic Online tickets, or if you just want to, you know, send me some well wishes, I'd really appreciate it, because I think I can do this. Like, I can do this, right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so this is my goal for the next month.
I'm sure you'll get there.
I hope so. You know, like I said, I only need 15 points to buy my seat into the preliminary. And then the preliminary is 6 rounds. And if you go 5-1 or 6-0, you move on to the finals. So I'm like, I can go 5-1. I went 5-1 at States. I can do this. And I can play modern dailies. If the legacy ones are too late, I can play legacy dailies. And you can get points through the league as well. But I haven't really been enjoying the leagues. And so I think I'm going to do it with just dailies. And I'm going to play one daily a day, except for Wednesdays. And I've got it all figured out. So I've got snacks. I've got my points. I'm ready to rock.
Good luck.
Awesome. So,
thank you. anything else you guys want to add before we close up the show? Mm-mm. Okay. So if anybody else has enjoyed listening to the show, how can they find you all and how can they get a hold of you?
So I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter at HalcanSan. That's HalcanSan. If you'd like to join my Facebook group for female magic grinders, it's called Ladies on the Grind. You can find it through my tweets, and you can send a request to join. You can read my articles here on GatheringMagic.com.
And I'm Katie. You can find me on Twitter at MeanMugger, that's MeanMugger, or by email, katie.neil14@gmail.com.
And I'm Chris. You can find me on Twitter at THKRIZ, that's at Chris. My Tumblr is also @Chris, and my Gmail account is yothkriz@gmail.com. And I've been enjoying all the Snapchats I've been getting. It's cryptic, command with K's. Name Katie.
I just sent you one.
Did you already send it?
Just now.
She didn't even get to finish.
I knew it was coming up, and I got excited, and I was like, I gotta send her one.
And I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at Original Estrus. That's OriginalOestrus. You can email me personally at estrus@elitistjerks.com. The show is on Twitter at the GF Bracket. You can find us every Friday on GatheringMagic.com. And we're also on iTunes and Stitcher, so feel free to subscribe and leave us a review on there as well. Thank you all so much for listening, and please take care of yourselves, okay? Bye-bye.